Good morning, everyone. Today I'd like to talk about outflow propagation in the progenitor in the context of gamma ray bursts. So these figures are examples of my numerical results. Left panel shows correlated outflow proceeding in the progenitor, and right panel shows expanding outflow like a spherical supernova explosion. So today I'd like to talk about why this difference is observed and how we can apply it to astrophysical phenomena. So gamma ray bursts are the most energetic phenomena in the sky. So the energy is 10 to the 50 watt to 53 Erics if the burst is isotropic, and about 1,000 events per year are observed, and the duration is from a few microseconds up to a few thousand seconds, and light curves and duration differs each other like this. So these figures are from batch observation, and recent observations suggest the long burst, the origin of long burst is a supernova explosion. So that's the association of gamma ray burst and supernova explosion. So this is an example of GRB 030328. So here, a few days after the burst and after a month later. So you can see, so from power low component, it's as afterglow to supernova component. And recently we have observed new event. And so the explosion energy of supernova 1990 HBW, which was associated with gamma ray burst, is about 2 times 10 to the 52 Erics, so which is 10 times larger energy than that of normal explosion.
You have to be careful with this because it was a very aspherical supernova.
Uh-huh.
So Uplich in 1999 showed that if you take aspherity into account, meaning more quantitatively, an isotropy in the velocity of a factor of 2 to 3, polar versus the equatorial direction, the total energy, kinetic energy, may have to be reduced by a factor of at least 4, perhaps 9.
Uh-huh.
So that although pronounced spherical, it may well be having a total kinetic energy which is comparable to a typical supernova.
This disagrees with Ken. Ken has looked into it as well. And were you working with Ken on that?
I know him
well. Well, Ken said it reduces it by a factor of 2, not by more. So Ken's reduction is factor of 2.
And was that all the same 1998
BW?
Yeah.
So the uncertainty then is a factor of 10. Would we agree on that?
No, I would. Then you have to say which theorist do you trust more. I
think. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's
the uncertainty. Okay, so the characteristic of supernova is supernova produced very rich nickel mass. So the observation says about 0.5 solar masses nickel was produced. So here is Nomoto reported, so there is a branch of supernova which produces hypernova, and then nickel mass becomes larger than that of normal one supernova.
Liquid mass you get just from the luminosity? That liquid mass you say comes just from the luminosity?
Or? Yeah. Yes,
from the light to the spectrum.
Yeah, so the mass is...
The spectrum also, that's what I meant. Is it only from the Lebanon?
The nickel mass is derived from the luminosity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's uncertain because of the asymmetries.
Well, that's why we're wondering if you
do the luminosity. In the nebula phase, it's the asymmetries.
Yeah, but at that point, you get the same one. That's what I was getting at, if you get from the spectrum.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
wait. How many of these have the nebular phase, nickel?
No, it's mainly IT, BW.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a simple question, but why are there there are only four or five supernovae
about
20 solar masses on this figure.
Is
there
a
only
yeah.
Here?
Oh,
yeah, I'm not
sure.
Are there any other supernovae that
have
ever been seen?
I don't know.
Well, in fact, every supernova for which they claim they know the progenitor is actually below 20 solar masses.
So
I think these are just some samples that
you've
given.
There are only five.
No, no, but these are just some samples that you've used.
Yeah, this is just, I think this is just examples. So.
But there are additional supernovae that could go on this figure above 20 solar masses.
Above or below?
Above 20 solar masses.
Oh.
Well,
are those the only ones that have ever been observed above
20
solar masses, or are there more?
It's really hard to get the main sequence masses. So these are, I think these are the ones that maybe someone can answer this, but I thought these are the only ones that Ken has done his analysis to get the masses of them. Now there's certainly other papers where you can find, like Mario Hamman did for his thesis, a whole bunch of paper where you got a whole bunch of stars more massive than 20 solar masses, but I don't think that many people believe those masses.
I think these might be the best ones.
Yeah.
Even these have
Somewhat
sort of subjective to uncertainty.
Yeah.
But then also the whole bunch of type 1bc supernovae should essentially be above that range, but we have no clue.
Well,
we never analyzed them,
Yeah, that's right. So,
there are a ton that we know of.
It's a hard game to get the masses of the progenitor without seeing the progenitor before it explodes.
Yeah, so the theory predicts the gamma ray burst begins with highly thermally dominated plasma and expand as a reactive jet. So initially, so baryonless and high thermal dominated plasma, so it's a fireball as a central engine is here. And then so it expands, but the expansion is not a spherical one. And just collimated outflow, and it should be highly relativistic one. So Lorentz factor should be larger than 100. And then so propagating after some distances, the plasma becomes optically thin. Then so gamma rays emitted, and in later phase so forward shock and reverse shock is formed, and afterglow is observed in X-ray to radio bands. But we have not fully understood what the central engine is, and how can we make highly relativistic collimated outflow. And collapsar is a strong candidate of the central engine of the long duration gamma ray burst. So this hypothesis is observationally supported. So collapsar model is a kind of core collapse supernova and highly aspherical explosion. So here is a schematic figure of the progenitor. Progenitor has from iron mass, silicon and carbon oxygen. And sometimes so helium envelopes has gone by stellar wind. So when the ion core collapses, then so black hole or protoneutron star is formed in the center of the progenitor. And then so outer layers begin to free fall. And due to rapidly rotation of the progenitor, an accretion gas is expected to form an accretion disk. And MHD and or neutron annihilation forms a bipolar jet, but this mechanism is not fully understood yet. But free fall time scale of these outer envelopes is the order of 100 seconds. But formed jet crossing time scale is expected to about 10 seconds. So this means the formed jet should propagate in the progenitor. And two types of approaches by relativistic hydrodynamic simulations have been performed. So those are so thermal energy deposition type and injected jet type. So left panel shows results by Aloy et al. 2000. So they assumed initially a spherical progenitor initial conditions. So so it means so the gas along the axis around the center of the progenitor is quite dilute because the gas freely drops to the center of the progenitor. Then they deposit thermal energy in the center of the progenitor. Then the deposited thermal energy, thermal dominated gas expands, but the density along this axis is quite high, and the density along this axis is dilute. Then, so the expansion occurs to polar axis. And this expanding outflow becomes a collimated jet and successfully erupts from the progenitor. And they get a maximum Lorentz factor about 40 in their calculations. And the other type of calculation is like this by Zhang et al. So they inject, so this is a polar axis here, and the time evolution of the calculations. So they inject the outflow from this boundary. So, and the injected outflow proceeds and forms the bow shocks, and in later phase, so the outflow elapses from the progenitor and expands to the interstellar medium. And in their calculation, they got a maximum Lorentz factor about 100. But these calculations shows successful eruption of the relativistic jets from the progenitor. But these there still remain some issues. Because, for example, there are similar phenomena to GRBs. So those are X-ray flashes and X-ray rich gamma ray bursts. So left panel shows light curve of one so gamma ray burst in different energy bands. So you can see signals in all energy bands here. On the contrary, here is a light curve of X-ray flash. So you can see signals in X-ray bands, but no remarkable signals in gamma ray bursts. So the phenomena look like quite similar. So especially the difference, so the difference is only the peak energy. And the event rate of X-ray flash is X-ray flashes is similar to those of gamma ray bursts. So there are several hypotheses to explain this, to connect these phenomena. So one is off-axis model. So we just observe these events different viewing angle. So if we observe the relativistic jet on axis, then we observe it as gamma ray burst And if we observe it off-axis, then we observe it on X-ray flashes. And the other hypothesis claims the phenomena is the difference is just different opening angle. So gamma ray burst is quite highly collimated one, and X-ray flash is just wide opening angle outflows. So to answer these questions, we have studied jet propagation by outflow injection model. So here is a numerical setup of our model. So this is a schematic figure of the half of progenitor here. Here is the center of the progenitor and here is the surface of the progenitor. And the radius of the progenitor is about 4 times 10 to the 10 centimeters. And the blue region is on computational box. So the boundary is here, so slightly separated from the center of the progenitor. And here is the radiant mass profile of the progenitor. We adopt the progenitor developed by Hashimoto et al. The mass of the progenitor about 40 solar mass at the main sequence and 16 solar mass at the pre-supernova stage. And the boundary, the mass of the density of the boundary here is about 10 to the 6 gram centimeters. So it's still quite high density here. And our progenitor includes a helium envelope, but the difference of expanding and collimated feature discussed in later doesn't matter so if we include this envelope or not. And we inject outflows, which is assumed to be parallel to the axis initially, so no opening angles. And we solve two-dimensional relativistic hydrodynamic equations, assuming ideal gas equilibrium state. And specific heat ratio is assumed to be 4/3. And in this panel, I'd like to explain outflow conditions, injected outflow conditions. So we have done parametric study on injected outflow, varying kinetic and thermal energy of the injected outflow. So 4 parameters are necessary to define the outflow condition. And we fixed two of them. The first one is radius of the injected outflow to be 7 times 10 to the centimeter, 7 centimeter. And the second one is power of the injected outflow is to be 10 to the 51 elk per second. And this power includes both kinetic and thermal energy, and we follow up to 10 seconds injections. So then 10 seconds injection satisfies the explosion energy 10 to the 52 elks. Then we vary other two parameters. Those are Gamm Lorentz factor and specific internal energy of injected outflow. So Gamm Lorentz factor characterizes so kinetic energy of the injected outflow, and specific internal energy characterizes thermal energy of the injected outflow.
Is the injection supersonic?
Yeah. So all the models are supersonic, yeah.
You have a total energy, so if you pick a gamma, doesn't that, the rest of the energy has to go into thermal, or like, are those two independent parameters, the gamma and the thermal?
Yeah.
But the E-tone is, the D and E-T is fixed, right?
So yeah.
I have a total energy, I have an energy in kinetic, which is essentially a gamma, or is it not? It's more than, I guess there's a mass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a bit confusing the way it is written here, because if you have a block that is hot and you move it fast, then it is true there's an additional gamma entering as an additional factor on the thermal energy, because your epsilon is the internal energy as measured in the co-moving frame. And so if you speed it up, E kinetic plus E thermal, it's not really well defined to write it in that fashion.
Yeah.
Energy has an inertia, of course, once you start moving it very fast, it shows up an additional gamma. So it's better to write E kinetic plus gamma times the internal thermal energy.
Uh-huh. So and using so these four parameters and we can derive also other physical conditions of injected jet, such as so density or pressures. And here is a log scale density contrast of on the specific energy versus on Lorentz factor plane.
What's the temperature of your
fluid? We don't define the temperature, but we can derive the temperature from specific internal energy here.
Do you have a typical value, though, or order of magnitude for a temperature down on the bottom?
We don't define the temperature, but...
As you said, it does follow. I just can't do the arithmetic.
Yeah. Here is the density contours. For example, these symbols show models studied here. So for example, the model here is Lorentz factor is 5 and specific internal energy is 5. So the density is about a few tens gram per cubic centimeter. So this model includes both high kinetic and thermal energy, so the density becomes low. And as the velocity decreases thermal energy decreases, then the density of the injected outflow becomes higher. So these models initially, we studied on the Lorentz factor up to 5, but we studied on the models so highly thermal dominated plasma. We can expect the plasma expands and energy conversion from thermal energy to kinetic energy occurs. So then we can get highly Lorentz factor component. So maximum Lorentz factor can be derived from energy conservation law like this. This equation is derived assuming free expansion. So this assumption is quite similar to the maximum explosion energy, explosion velocity for the case of supernova explosion.
Does gravity not matter at all here?
Oh, we don't include both gravity of the central black hole and self-gravity because the free-fall time scale is quite longer than jet propagation time scale.
The intermediate. So
what really determines the gamma max? I'm not sure. The gamma naught is something that you assume, and from that you're limited to the gamma max, the final thing that you can get. You can't just keep making any gamma naught and getting any gamma max out of it, right?
You're
correct.
So what really determines
in the real world?
Yes, I mean,
it's free.
Yeah, gamma box is depend on both.
This is a very clean model, which is no interaction with the wind. For example, this is a leptonic wind. There is no baryonic pollution in this model.
So then how do you determine gamma naught, maybe, so that you get it? Because you can...
No, it's your best guess. You just make it some form.
But then in nature, there must be some limit on
gamma naught, right? That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, because we...
to find maximum gamma, and you have to go to either and or the small period here, microphysics or microscopic physics at the center, which is model dependent to find the suitable.
But there must be just energy consideration somewhere, right? Because you can't just...
Yeah. I mean, the gamma max isn't... That's your result, I guess, which is the organic destruction and stuff like that. So it's, the only case gamma naught and epsilon naught.
Yeah, in this case, it just depends on gamma naught. But he's setting those parameters too, so there's no actual limit to gamma max.
Oh, yeah, so...
Since he's setting those two parameters also.
Yeah, since so the maximum Lorentz factor depends on both initial bulk Lorentz factor and specific internal energy, so we chose so these parameters as a parameters.
So you can set it to whatever you want.
Yeah, because we don't know so how the outflow is mechanism of outflow formation. So we systematically studied the varying so these parameters.
I think Mike Norman was and his collaborators in the 80s was one of the first to take this sort of ansatz, just take a slit, specify whatever you like to specify, and see what happens. Okay, without making any connection to the true inner.
Okay, I guess it's okay as long as you.
Yeah,
by
way of experiment. It's okay.
Yeah, so this highly thermal dominated plasma is expected to be gamma reverse. Of course, also these models cannot produce highly high Lorentz factor components. So these guys are expected to be supernova explosion. Yeah. So at first, I'd like to show numerical results of these models. These four models. So these four models are, so initial bulk Lorentz factor are fixed to be 5, but different initial specific internal energy. So all models show collimated outflow. But maximum Lorentz factor differs each other because initial thermal energy are different. So the outflow can keep the collimated structure and show successful eruption from the progenitor. And you can see so complex structure are near the center. And I'd like to show, or let me show a movie of this model. So top panel shows rest mass density and lower one shows Lorentz factors. So the outflow injected from this boundary and the outflow keeps a highly collimated structure. Yeah. And initially, the backflow is formed, which is parallel to the injected outflow. And then, so complex structure appears. And high relativist component appears along the axis.
So this is without rotation, is it correct?
Oh, yeah, this correlation doesn't on rotation, just on just two-dimensional correlation.
So the initial conditions is just a simply an infinitely thin directed jet.
Yeah. So initially, so parallel.
The thing is just how that expands depending on epsilon and
norm. Yeah. So in this case, the bow shock drives the progenitor gas to high pressure and high temperature. Then so the high pressure component works to keep the confinement.
So irrespective of your Lorentz factor, you always exit, you always come out of the envelope within 10 seconds?
Oh, Lorentz factor?
I mean, whatever your Lorentz factor is, maximum, you still come out of the envelope, the jet still interacts with the surrounding medium in less than 10 seconds.
Yeah. The eruption occurs about 3 seconds in all cases here. But we followed the injection up to 10 seconds. And maximum Lorentz factor component appears for these models. Maximum Lorentz factor component appears during the propagation in the progenitor. But for these cases, maximum Lorentz factor component appears after the eruption, especially near the injection point.
But you said in the beginning that whether you have the helium envelope or not, doesn't really matter, but I'm sure it should matter, right? Because that makes up most of your star, in a sense. That makes up most of the radius of your star. So if you remove the helium envelope, your jet will come out much faster and much...
Yeah, of course. So, the effect of helium envelope I mentioned in numerical setup is just the feature of the collimated or expanding features. So expanding feature will be shown in later. I mean the feature does not affect it on the helium envelope. That means collimated feature will be shown if the helium envelope doesn't include it.
Rephrase the question slightly differently. Is this what they would call a light jet or a heavy jet? Because the ratio of
the
jet is, which is related to this question, is important.
Yeah. Okay. So initially, the density as a bound around the boundaries 10^6 gram per cubic centimeter. And
that's the environment or the jet density?
No, environment, so progenitor gas. So here's the radial mass profile of the progenitor.
And the jet density?
And jet density is, so...
That's where you showed the
various models. Yeah, so up to 10^5.
Okay,
so all jet, all models are light jet initially.
But these four models are all less than
10^2
for the jet density.
Yeah, all these models are up to 10^2, yeah.
And so it's already collimated by the, you said that you don't need the helium part of the star to collimate it. Is it already collimated when it hits the helium? Or does it collimate even if it's just going through ISM?
Yeah, so these models show collimated features.
Yeah. But these have helium on top? Or is this even before it's hit the helium?
Yeah, so the helium envelope, around here. So the feature is decided on before the helium envelope.
So you're saying even if you remove the whole thing completely in your simulation, it won't make that much of a difference?
Yeah. So maximum Lorentz factor is good to agreement with simple formula discussed in the numerical setup, and highly reactive jet, so for example like this, this guy would be observed as GRBs later. And mildly reactive jet is observed, and this guy would be observed as X-ray flashes later. And in collimated outflows, so internal structures are observed. So here is our mass, or red one is mass, and blue one is Lorentz factor profile along the axis, just so in the Z, in the early phase of the dynamics. So here is an unshocked progenitor gas. Here is a bow shock. So you can see complex some internal shocks in the Z. And so the discontinuities correspond to internal shocks. And those are so how there are two possibilities to form such internal structures. So one is shear flow instability in the jet itself. And the other possibility is interaction between the jet and backflow here. So backflow comes from head of the jet, and backflow is close to and parallel to the injected jet. So it's kind of Kelvin-Helmholtz instabilities. But we cannot identify which instability is dominant to this internal structures. And we also done so higher resolution calculations. And higher resolution calculation shows similar property of the dynamics. But finer structures appears. So this is the case of normal resolution version, and here is twice on resolution version. Oh, the resolution is the calculation was done on. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact grid numbers, but a few thousand and a few hundred, but it's not uniform. The logarithm or linear. So you can see so high finer structures, not only here but also here, than that of those of normal resolution version. And so you can see quite finer resolutions. And let me move on to so other cases. So the cases here, so the slower model, so initial velocity is 0.5 light speed. So you can see expanding feature in every cases. And here is a bow shock here, and reverse shock stays here. Yeah, for the collimated jet case, the reverse shock stays head of the jet. So bow shock and reverse shock moves very the distance of reverse shock and bow shock doesn't change in as time goes on. But in this case, the reverse shock separates from the bow shock as time goes on. So it is similar to the case of supernormal remnant case. And here the movie of this case. The outflow expands when the injection occurs, and the reverse shock here and bow shock, so the distance increases as time goes on. So this expansion is this expansion is quite similar to the spherical supernova explosion. And of course, the maximum Lorentz factor is quite on non-relativistic one, so up to 1.2 or up 1.3. So this is a summary of the flow feature of the collimated and expanding one. So collimated jet has a backflow from the head of the jet, and the expanding shock is just doesn't have such a backflow, and the reverse shock and bow shock separates as time goes on, so like this. And a continuous transition from collimated jet to expanding jet, expanding outflow is observed. So here is a let me show the series of calculations fixing on specific internal energy and varying initial on velocity or Lorentz factor. So here is a result. Often the break happens so from high velocity injection to slower injection model. So you can see on the continuous transition from collimated to so mildly collimated and expanding features. And so these are so density contour panel on the specific internal energy and Lorentz factor planes. So red circles, the models of red circles are quite highly collimated. So the opening angle less than 5 degrees. And blue square models are mildly collimated outflow. So the opening angle is from 5 to 20 degrees. And triangles are expanding model. So the opening angle is larger than 20 degrees. So the same feature is observed on the other series. So fixing specific internal energy to be 1 or 5. In summary, so the feature of the outflow varies from collimated jets to expanding outflow by changing the injected outflow velocity. And highly relativistic and collimated jet would be observed as GRBs. And the mildly relativistic and collimated jet or expanding outflow would be observed as X-ray flashes. And the non-relativistic or expanding outflow would be observed as spherical or supernova explosion. So no associated gamma ray bursts or X-ray flashes. And the achieved maximum Lorentz factor depends on the both Lorentz factor and specific internal energy of the injected outflow. And fine structures along the jet are observed in the jet. And there are two possibilities to explain the these fine structures. So one is shear flow instability in the jet itself, or non-linear Kelvin Helmholtz instability, so between jet and backflows. And as future works, formation mechanism of the outflow from the center of the progenitor, this is not fully understood. So including neutrino physics, so for example, transport and cooling. And MHD calculations, so magnetized outflow is also interesting. So for example, so for our case, so the power will be the magnetic energy will be included to total energy. And nucleosynthesis of the explosion is also interesting problem. So where is nickel 56 is synthesized. So in the accretion disk and or in the jet. And after the eruption of the progenitor is also quite interesting. So how the jet expands and so radiative process, sorry, and magnetic field generation and amplification. And afterglow phase is also a challenging problem. So that's all. Thank you for your attention.
Don't you get any instabilities from the interaction of the jets with supernova, well, with the progeny of the star, or is it just internal instabilities?
Oh, so as we said, so we don't identify the origin of these fine structures. But we observed backflow from the head of the progenitor. So, yeah, it is so, yeah, unstable for Kelvin Helmholtz instability. But there is a study just on concentrating just on shear flow instability in the jet itself, not on interaction between jet and backflow. And the time scale of this shear flow instability is quite fast. So it could be the origin of this instability, but we cannot identify so which one is which one dominates for the instability.
How far back do you get this backflow? Is it just the outer parts or is it?
Yeah. As described in this schematic figure, just the jet the kinematic energy is converted to thermal energy at the head, and then this thermal dominated plasma thermal energy is converted to kinetic energy again. So, and
how back does this backflow reach? Is it just
just surrounding the jet. Yeah.
But I think the instabilities you're talking about should definitely be seen in the expanding jets at least, right? Which are not going at a very high velocity. You mean between the surface of the jet and the surrounding medium, right? And it's propagating. And you should certainly see shear instabilities out there.
Yeah.
This is the expanding jet scale.
Oh, we don't such so high fine structures for expanding case. It's just for the collimating jet case.
No, but still, there's always shear between the surface of the jet and the surrounding medium.
Oh yeah, we don't observe such shear for the case of expanding one. Oh, I'm sorry.
That would only happen with the cocoon, the backflow.
Pardon?
That would happen perhaps with the cocoon or the backflow.
No, but still, you're just going through the density gradient out there. Yeah. And
yeah.
So I would expect that you would anyway see there's a clear density gradient if you show the movement.
Yeah, you mean the discontinuity here?
No, just the surface of the jet and the surrounding.
Which surface? Oh.
You mean between the backflow and the surrounding?
Yeah.
But they also have a temperature difference. It's a density difference and temperature difference, but they are in pressure equilibrium.
Yeah, but
okay. You're saying that, well, I guess then we have to know the temperature. Okay.
Because it's created, as you correctly said, by conversion of kinetic energy into thermal energy, and we have a radial. Essentially, it's pressure driven. So
unless you really have a pressure equilibrium, which
you must have at some point.
Yeah, but we don't observe backflow for the expanding outflow case.
Well, you make this the main shock.
Yeah, max shock.
Does have a radial expansion.
Yeah.
In the post shock region because it's very hot and it's subsonic.
Uh-huh. Oh, inside of the bow shock.
Yeah, no. The bow shock is just the main head on the case. But prior to that, you have a Mach disk, and behind the Mach disk.
Oh, contact discontinuity.
But just behind the Mach disk, you have, of course, heating, right? Kinetic energy into thermal energy, and that, because it's two dimensional, or higher dimensional, it's not one dimensional. Yeah. So you have a lateral expansion, which is pressure driven, and that then basically produces stuff that's left behind while jet matures. So, yeah, but that reaches a pressure equilibrium.
Yeah, we interested in the formation of the internal shocks to explain the variability of the So the we sometimes observe also variabilities in the gamma ray or light curves, so, and internal shock models could explain this time variabilities. But the origin of internal shock doesn't is not discussed so much. So we are here. So we expected the fine structures observed in jet in the jet may be the origin of this internal shock.
Velocity.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have the above and epsilon 0 divided by c squared is big on above 1. Is there something superluminal or such?
Superluminal?
Huh?
So if.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, the specific internal energy around the unity is a critical point. So, if the so thermal energy is relativistic one or not. So this.
Yeah, if epsilon zero is
square of
velocity, dimensional.
Velocity.
Velocity, yes. Square of velocity.
Do you mean sound speed?
I don't know what, but it is a space dimensional. Because epsilon 0 divided by c squared is dimensionalless.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So epsilon 0 must be square of the dimension of velocity.
Yeah, so specific internal energy character is the sound velocity.
Specific thermal energy, resonance energy. So,
yeah.
It's not speaking of energy.
It's
a bit extreme.
Yeah.
It's quite hotter than the resonance energy.
Yeah, so this parameter characterizes, yeah. Sound velocity of the, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going back deeper in, everything is in the thermal energy. There's not much of a gamma, and you're depositing energy however you're doing it. It converts into gamma, and so at 7 × 10⁷, they picked reasonable numbers for possible gammas in thermal energy. But oftentimes, thermal energy is. The deeper you go in, the thermal energy is dominating the energy, and it has to convert
into kinetic. In the Wolseley
results,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. In almost any explosion model you would produce. Mm.
In so an explosion model, yeah. Yeah. Right. But if you have a linear accelerator, it could be different.
Yeah, that's, yeah, so in astronomy's, yeah, you could imagine some magnetic field that's just accelerating particles, that's true.
That's one, but you could also have a gravitational mechanism. As
no mechanism yet proposed has that. So if Daniel Program does magnetic fields, most of the energy first goes into thermal and then it gets into kinetic. So far the mechanisms proposed are it dominates thermal first and goes into kinetic.
Thermal first.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.